From the Jackalope Studios high above the city in beautiful Zona Rosa, welcome to Minutes to Memories, reconnecting spirit, mind, and body with your host, Dr. Daryl Drumright.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Drumright. Happy Friday night. Everybody go crack a cold one. We're going to get deep again tonight. This is a Minutes to Memory, soon going to be the Harmony Health Hour after the first of the year. So we're going to jump right in tonight. We've got a couple quick verses of the Tao Te Ching, verse 27 and 28, and then I've got an awesome guest speaker. I don't know, I call him host because we've been on the radio before. Wait till you hear his voice. He's going to sound awesome. His name's Doug Billings, so we go way back. We've got lots of stories to tell and not tell. And where he's written a new book called Your Wonderful Life, and we're going to get deeply into that book and let him explain some things about the adventures called life and what us middle-aged men have learned over the last too many years. Well, let's get going, you guys. I hope everybody's comfortable. We're going to talk about the Tao Te Ching, starting off with verse number 27. Wisdom is effortless mutuality. The expert traveler leaves no footprints. The expert speaker makes no mispronunciations. The expert in calculations needs no calculator. The expert in closing things needs no lock. Yet no one can open what has been closed. The expert in binding uses no knots. Yet no one can pull apart what has been bound. The expert in caring for things never wastes anything. The expert at helping people never abandons anyone. These are the paths to enlightenment. Those who arrive at their destination teach those who are still on the path, while these still on the path are sources of wisdom for the teachers. And this is coming from Dr. Ralph Ellen Dale's book. I definitely highly recommend the book. Dr. Dale passed away a few years ago, but he was a mentor of mine and an amazing, thoughtful man in acupuncture and ancient wisdoms. His commentary on this verse. We are reminded here that sharing wisdom requires two basic qualities. One, an enlightened expertise, and two, an effortless mutuality. No matter how good a traveler you may be, if you do it under stress, you will indeed lead evidence of your dis-ease. No matter how good a speaker you are, if there is a lack of agreement between you and your audience, you are likely to become inarticulate. No matter how good you are at counting, if you are counting something in which the others involved have an opposite vested interest, you are likely to make mistakes. The wise who achieve an enlightened expertise in effortless mutuality teach those who are still on the path, but are always enriching themselves by learning from their students. I always leave that with a pause because these things are just so profound.
That was powerful.
Okay, verse number 28, the fusion of opposites. To know the masculine and be to the feminine is to be the waterway of the world. To be the waterway of the world is to flow with the great integrity, always swirling back to the innocence of childhood. To know yang and to be true to yin is to echo the universe. To echo the universe is to merge with the great integrity, ever returning to the infinite. To know praise and be true to the lowly is to be a model for the planet. To be a model for the planet is to express the great integrity as the primal simplicity, like an uncarved block. When the uncarved block goes to the craftsman, it is transformed into something useful. The wise craftsman cuts as little as necessary because he follows the great integrity. Commentary. First, we are reminded that all 10,000 things of the universe are composed of opposites, masculine and feminine, yang and yin, high and low. Second, Lao Tzu tells us that we should allow yin to be dominant of the two opposites, that is, to know the masculine but be true to the feminine, to know yang but be true to the yin, to know praise but be true to the lowly. Third, Lao Tzu observes that to merge with the great integrity is to ever return to the innocence of childhood, to the infinite, and to make useful things by minimal transformations of nature. Yin predominated during the Neolithic era of communal matriarchal tribes. Our own age turned all this upside down. Throughout recorded history, our civilizations have been male-dominated, competitive, nature-destructive, and ruled by those who were the most aggressive and warlike. This is precisely why Lao Tzu finds it necessary to remind us that we have been living in the opposite to nation, in opposition to nature, and that we need to return to the great integrity. How much more critical is it for us today to understand and to follow Lao Tzu's advice? Not to follow it in his time led to great unhappiness. Not to follow it in our time could lead to the end of our species and this planet. Dr. Dale, when he brings these things up to modern times, he died with a great optimism that the secrets and the knowledge of 2,700 years ago that Lao Tzu talked about, the philosophers of Lao Tzu's time would discuss the great paradox and the needs for return to the natural ways, to not try to define things and find wisdom in letting things be as they are and be at one with them. Dr. Dale, in his passing, he was in his early 90s, understood or hoped with the internet and with the communication devices and the global community that's developing before us today, that we have the opportunity to actually create the great integrity, or get back to the great integrity of all is one and one is all kind of thing. And it's very important that we as a people really begin to understand. And I had this conversation with somebody the other day, a group of chiropractors at the convention, that they were talking about how in modern America, we seem to be demasculating the men. You know, you're seeing a feminization of the young men and the hormones in the milk and all kinds of things. And these were all valid topics of discussion. But I presented them to Lao Tzu's understanding. And actually, I do a lot of study in Native American culture as well. And all the Native cultures, the females were the center of the tribe. The females took care of the family and took care of the continuation of the tribal arrangements and the law, where the men were basically the hunters, the gatherers, and they'd go out and do men things and fight each other and just goof off like men do. Well, in that situation, it was healthy because there was nobody depending on the men. They could go do that kind of stuff, and everybody just kind of expected that's what they were going to do. But what happened in our Western world is, and even the Eastern cultures with the emperors and stuff like that, is when men gained dominance and used their young masculinity to take possession of the reins of power, they didn't leave behind their aggressions, their egos, this male ego. And it's been likened to a disease of modern man, is that we are possessed with this dominate everything kind of mindset. And if we would just back off and let the women run things, then it would be a much more blended, healthy orientation. And we need to have the courage, as the men that are now growing up expected to be these dominant males. We're expected, our culture expects us to stride forth and take on the horns, the mantle of responsibility and lead the way out. That if you really got down to it, that's not stable. It's much more stable for the culture and for the future of humanity for the women to step forward and into the leadership roles and say, no, we carry the womb. We carry the species forward. We have the responsibility automatically laid upon us by nature. So you are just a silly, I mean, think about this. If you have one man and 20 women left on Earth, how many babies can you have at a time? Okay, you can repopulate the planet. But if you have one woman and 20 men, you're in trouble. Okay, so that leads us back to the importance of which sex of the two is definitely more important on the hierarchy of things. And I have these discussions with men all the time, and it really kind of puts a damper on the machismo, and you know, the guys start doing this, and then I start talking like that, and they're like, because they can't argue with it, you know, because I'm not dissing them anything. I'm actually setting them free. It's like, yeah, you can go play and run wild and crazy, but don't even try to be responsible because you're not good at it. Okay, so that's enough of my philosophical expansion on the two verses 27 and 28. So I want to give me a little brief introduction myself into my good friend and fraternity brother, Doug Billings. We go back into times past where my experiences with when I first met Doug and the people that I met with Doug. One of my greatest memories of that time frame was when the little sisters of the fraternity bought me my first pair of tennis shoes. You see, I came to college with engineer boots on. I grew up in a Harley biker gang, And I would concert t-shirts and long hair, and I was quite the hippie. But I had this weird paradox in that I was also a honor student, A student in high school. I was straight A's, you know, graduated classes, but I did it with my Black Sabbath concert t-shirts on. So when I got in the fraternity, I was nearly blackballed because I was just such a kind of weirdo, I guess, to what these fraternity guys were interested in. But I got through. I made great friends. Many of my best friends today, some 30 years later, are the men that I met in that fraternity back in the early 1980s. Mark, Doug, Mike, Ari, Jeff, I mean, all these guys I still talk to 30 years later. We're in different professions. We've gone different ways, yet we still have a bond. We still have this old history that binds us together. It's just an amazing thing. It helped me in so many ways to realize there was more to the world than what I'd seen so far. It really opened my eyes and brought things into my thinking that I'd never even conceived of before that. Well, Doug, after these 30 years of life that we've been apart, has lots of stories to tell. He's got a very exciting roller coaster life. I mean, I've read his book. There's ups, there's downs, there's regrets, there's hallelujahs, there's lots of glory. There's lots of things in this book, and we're going to cover a couple of the topics that he feels are important that he put into chapters of this book. And I really think that you're going to enjoy this. And I tell you, in all my studies, studying Lao Tzu and studying different things, it was a great joy to me to reading a friend's book. He has statements and topics that are very original here that are very profound and useful for anybody out there who's having questions and having trouble in their life. The name of his book is Your Wonderful Life. It was recently published. Is there a publishing house?
Arthur House was the name of
Arthur House. Mm-hmm. So, Doug, come on in here now. I know you've got a great, wonderful radio voice. We have been on the air before.
We have indeed.
Right. Doug was a disc jockey in North Carolina back in the early 80s.
WHSL, baby.
All right. Yep. We spent a New Year's Eve together.
On the air.
On the air. And we were definitely entertaining that night. So Doug, let's get into this give me if you got anything to do as far as introducing yourself or anything beyond that.
You've done a great job. Only to thank you for the opportunity to be here with you. And you're right about those days back in our college days. And the good thing about the friendships that we established, which is evident right now with me and I'm sure with you, is that no matter how many years go by, 30, 20, 15, whatever it may have been up until this point, once we see each other again, it's as if it were just yesterday that we were in college. So
it is.
That's the beauty of really good friendships. And so I'm thankful that you and I share that. And thanks for the opportunity to be here to talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. I've been looking forward to this night for a number of weeks.
Yeah. The book really was born out of, and you hit upon it, you know, everyone, you know, you talk about the ups and downs, the highs and lows, the ebbs and flows of life. Everyone has them. We could all sit down and write about, you know, the times in life where we've made mistakes, where we've had regrets, we've fallen down, we have to get up. And so hopefully the book in some way or another encourages people to look at failure, mistakes in a different way, that, you know, no one's as bad as the worst thing they've done, and that life is always wonderful. You just have to look at it through a certain perspective.
So this, and that's one of those quotes I was talking about that you bring up in the book. It says, no one is bad as the worst thing they've done. So you have people out there running around right now that have this thing called guilt. Mm-hmm. And I run into it all the time in the office. And to get people past a certain situation, you know, to help with the healing process in my office, the ones that have the most difficulty getting on with the next phase of their life are the ones that are carrying around this mantle almost. It's like they wear it, this thing called guilt. It's like, well, I have this guilt and I can't get beyond it. And I can't, you know, I want to be better and I want to be good, but do I deserve to be good? Mm-hmm. You know, so this lack of self-esteem comes out of that and you have this whole spiral. So that I help people. And, you know, and the way I do it, I'm kind of aggressive, is that I have people confront it. Just look at it. You got to just plug at it, look right at what you're saying, and then don't swallow that pill anymore.
You bet. You know? I agree with you completely. And that's the key. Looking at it, owning it, looking it right in its eye, embracing it even, mm-hmm. and letting it percolate through you to get past it. The perfect metaphor in the Western world is the cross. We all carry a cross. And, guilt becomes our cross in many cases. And so to take that metaphor a step further, the historical figure, Jesus, carrying a cross, how did Jesus get through? How did he relieve himself of the burden of the cross? He went through the experience. Mm-hmm. He was crucified, died, and rose, right? So in that Western sense then, relieving ourselves of guilt means you hang on to it. You embrace your cross. You embrace the mistakes of your past.
Right.
You don't forget them. I'm not saying the adage forgive and forget.
Right.
It's a dangerous adage because part of relieving ourselves from guilt means we have to forgive ourselves.
Right.
We have to forgive. And it's so important because if we don't, everything else that we do in life, all of the wonder that we want to experience in life really hinges on our ability to forgive ourselves and others. Love gets all the press, but it's forgiveness that's most important.
Yeah, we're going to get back to the love is all the press one, but it's interesting when you're talking the truth like this, how it comes full circle over and over and over again. I mean, they all wrap back around. Well, we're going to hit our first break here. You guys enjoy some music, and we're going to get back and cover some more topics. And listen, we're going to have some forums up soon, so be thinking of some questions in the future. I mean, this is some great discussion we're having here, but I want to hear from you guys soon. So I'll see you in a few minutes. This is Dr. Drumright, Minutes to Memories, coming to you at jackaloperadio.com.
And the men who hold high places must be the ones who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart, closer to the heart. Philosophers and plowmen, each must know his part to sow a new mentality closer to the heart. Yes, closer to the heart. Yeah.
What a big bag of Skittles. Lemon, lime, grape, watermelon. Oh!
Jackalope 105 FM.
All right, we're back. This is Dr. Drumright, Minutes to Memory, soon to be Harmony Health Hour. So Doug, I was thinking about that, and I was told a story the other day about that you're not as bad as the worst thing that you've done. Mm-hmm. And a patient was coming in and was talking to me about these kind of things. You know what? And now I've lost it. So
okay.
I'm going to kick it back to you.
Well, maybe if I start talking about it, it'll come to you. I think that the catchphrase, no one is as bad as the worst thing they've done, is important to realize. When you talk about people that carry around guilt, many times for years at a time, things that have happened 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago that they still feel guilty about, they still feel bad about. No one is as bad as the worst thing they've done. How is that possible? How is someone that you imagine someone that has done the most horrific thing imaginable, murder, rape, etc. How is that person not as bad as the act itself? Because the act is does not spring from a divine presence. The act has no life. The person that has a divine spark has a piece of the divine within him. So that spark of the divine, and no matter what you want to call it, creator, divine, essence of life, whatever, that's the reason. Because within every person, there's always the chance to become redeemed. Mm-hmm. Therefore, there's meaning, there's hope, there's a chance to rediscover the meaning in your life, and so therefore no one is as bad as the worst thing they've done. There are acts that are horrible, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But no life is as bad as the act.
Yeah, I can see that, and it brought back the story here, and I'm going to get to that, but before I get there, one of the things that you can see that some people will do is they will actually curse themselves from their past actions, and then through that self-loathing, they will actually continue to propagate bad actions.
Yes.
So their personality or their self, if you will, becomes, because of self-definition, they're actually adopting that because they think they are that evil person.
They become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. So the people that are like that are actually purposely, or not purposely or unconsciously, somehow adopted it themselves. They're not seeking salvation. They've given up. They're in apathy. Mm-hmm. They're down-toned on it, that's just how it is, and everybody's told them that, so they're just done for until they meet the right person at the right time, and the door is open, and they have the courage to step through. And that reminds me of the story. Is a patient came in the other day, and her son was recently killed. I mean, he was a 21, you know, just out of college by a drunk driver. Mm-hmm. And they had the court hearings on this drunk driver, and she and her family went to the court hearings and petitioned the court to back off, to leave him alone, to not even prosecute. They did not want to prosecute this man. They said, you know, this is not helpful. Mm-hmm. Our grief is not, I mean, making him, he's going to live with this anyway, and making his situation worse because of what he's done is not helping us. It's not helping them. And I almost cried with her at that point because of the release that their family had doing this. And then we got to talking about it further. And this young man that committed the act is a local high school teacher.
Oh my!
And you know, and he's a good man, and he's his guilt is going to be with him his entire life for what he did. Mm-hmm. Nothing they do can possibly make it worse on him, and their forgiveness of him, and actually they're actually looking. And I encourage them to do this, to develop a relationship with him. Mm-hmm. To take and replace her son that she lost in this incident. Mm-hmm. This was a magic moment, not happy moment, but a moment of introduction into a new human being that the two of you can build something even better out of this tragic experience that you both experienced together. So it was a wonderful moment of forgiveness that this woman expressed to me.
Beautiful story. And that's another, it's a prime example of out of the ashes of our lives, out of all the destruction, the mistakes, the pain of our past, out of those ashes comes new abundant life. I mean, look at anybody who's been through pain. And that's an extreme example. And I've heard similar ones, believe it or not, as recently as last week when we were at Barnes & Noble. So a woman comes up to me and shares a similar story. Mm-hmm. Her son and his new wife were in a car hit by a drunk driver. The wife was killed, married for 5 weeks. Uh-huh. You know, so those stories are out there.
Yeah.
But when you do what you've just described that this person is doing, you embrace that pain, you offer forgiveness to yourself, to the others, you look back, it's like the lava fields of Hawaii. The lava will scorch and sear everything in its sight, take control of everything, and it looks desolate, lifeless, and it is for a time. Mm-hmm. But then eventually life begins to grow again, and the life that comes up out of those ashes is more fertile than the life that was there before. So in our own lives, I think that's a prime, you know, that's another good metaphor, because our lives can become much more rich and much more wonderful if we can employ those kinds of devices in our life when tragedy strikes. Forgiveness, embracing the pain, you know, offering forgiveness instead of condemnation.
Right. It always reminds me of the parable of the phoenix, you know, the rising from the ashes. Yeah. And to me, the phoenix represents the human soul, the human spirit, because no matter what tragedy the story of life lays before you, if you understand your immortality, your spirit, the specialness on the inside, it tempers you. It makes you a better person. It makes you a more whole person to go through these things. I have a lot of challenges with my children because, I mean, like I say, I grew up in a with the Harley biker gang, you know, I mean, alcoholism and just wild times. It was very chaotic. So a lot of my strength of personality comes from tried and true and tested situations that mm-hmm. I survived through, and they came out okay. I'm like, okay, so I mm-hmm. must be okay. Mm-hmm. Or my children are growing up in a middle class McMansion, you know, mm-hmm. with dad's mm-hmm. a doctor and mom's mm-hmm. on the PTA, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to a private school, and mm-hmm. you know, they have a whole yep. different yep. experience than yep. I went to.
Right.
And I'm very cautious about challenging these children to be self-responsible, you know, mm-hmm. to look, this is your life. I don't care if you're only 7 years old. it's yeah. your life. You've got to be responsible for your own emotions. My youngest son is very passionate. He's got mm-hmm. my passion. And so mm-hmm. to coach him, I'm always telling him, well, he says, he made me mad. I'm like, no. He yeah. did something annoying. Yeah. I agree right. to that. Right. But you decided to get mad, yeah. okay?
And being mad isn't necessarily wrong. No. All emotions are good. Anger, right. love, hate, fear. It's what your son decides to do with his anger.
Exactly. It's like your tears are welling up and you're trying to tear his hair out. You know, yeah. that's not productive.
Sounds like you in college.
Yeah. yeah, too much like me. That's the thing. This is my curse. My youngest son is like, okay, it's a mini me. Sorry, wife. I'm sorry, Christina. Now you got two of us. Oh, but he's a great kid. I mean, his passion and his love and his emotion is just, I mean, mm-hmm. he walks in the room and just lights up.
Good.
Oh. Okay, so I want to just bring a couple more things out of here,
sure.
here Doug. I mean, that was a very good one. Let's see some of these other things. You hit on the atonement ideas. You know, it's funny, we get into these truths, they're just almost self-evident, but yet you run into people that have problems with this mm-hmm. because they're just... There's some misguidance in there. I don't know if you've seen this a lot, but a lot of times when somebody has a hard time getting through an issue, many times it's somebody else in their life that's actually mm-hmm.
yeah.
knocking them, that's actually holding them down, that's threatened by them. Mm-hmm. And then when they try to crawl up out of it and try to do the forgiveness and do these yep. steps that it takes to recover,
yep.
there's somebody around close by. That there's somebody around close by that's threatened by that activity, unconscious or conscious, yeah. and is doing things to subvert it or to knock them back down.
Yes.
You see, it's like the Italian mom, you know, that guilt pill again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, you did this and y'all just remember this. And, you know, mm-hmm. every time you start getting things going, here it is again. It's like, keep snapping you right
yep.
back.
Yep.
So, I mean, what do you do? I mean, as far as advising somebody who's got that kind of a situation going on?
I think that ultimately, we can't blame other people. We can't, you know, when we look into the past or the present, everything is the past except right now. So no matter how far back in the past we want to look, what's inappropriate is to blame other people for our state. What's inappropriate is to blame other people for our current predicament in life, whether we're in a good predicament or a bad predicament. Others didn't get us here. We did.
Right.
It's the decisions that we made. So my answer to your question is we make better decisions or we make different decisions. We don't decide to let people get us down and to bring us into the same rut. If we have to change and break circles of friends and leave and find better people, the old phrase from scripture, bad company corrupts good character, is true.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to change environments, but it's our decision. Our decisions are the reason why we're here. Your decisions to leave the Harley lifestyle, to get A's and to become a doctor, were your responsibility. There's no puppet master in this room.
Right.
You're in charge of your own destiny. And so are we all.
Right, right. So I think you actually covered that in your book is that when you find yourself reverberating back into that trap and you recognize that there's somebody there or there's exposure, the old friends. I think you talked about drug addiction,
that. Yeah, drug, alcohol.
Going back into those communities or mm-hmm. those places yep. where those people haven't gotten beyond it, like yep. you're trying to get beyond yep. it. Yep. You're setting your own trap.
You're exactly right. And I'm a big believer in relationships, Dr. D. I mean, we're not meant to go this life alone. We need relationships. I'm not talking marriage necessarily. I'm not talking – we just need people. We need people in our lives, and we need to have relationships. But when relationships corrupt and when people involved in your life are bad and present bad circumstances or a bad occasion for you to make poor decisions, then we need to recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big believer in maintaining significant relationships at all cost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in a marriage or in a significant love relationship and your spouse has an addiction issue, I would be the last person in the world to say, well, you just move on. I think I would be the first to say you're responsible to help your wife, your spouse,
you've made
your
that
partner.
Commitment.
You have made that commitment. That's what in this society that we've failed to do so often. It's so easy to run away and turn our back when times get tough. But I think that relationships are key. And to get away from the folks that are making bad decisions easier for you is what we need to think about doing.
Right, right, right. And so support them, but it comes. There just comes a moment or comes a time when yep. you just, you've grown up yep. and they haven't. Yep. And so you leave them with a blessing.
Yep.
You know, and yep. I love the blessing of, you know, thank you for your love and your mm-hmm. support. Mm-hmm. And there's and in some of my past training, what we call is ending the communication sometimes. When somebody pushes your buttons a lot, there's one magic word that really shuts them up. It's called thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then nothing else.
Yep.
You just say
yep.
thank you. Mm-hmm. You look them in the eye and say thank you. Mm-hmm. And then don't ever yeah. let the conversation get past yep. that. Because yep. when you fall into it, mm-hmm. they'll drag you out, yep. they'll run you through yep. the mud, yep. and you're just laying the lines for them to push the yep. buttons.
And that's good, because thank you implies that you're thankful for their role in your life, which you truly are, because whether it's bad, horrible, or horrendous, or a wonderful experience,
right.
every experience that you have has potential to be good, even the bad ones,
right.
because we learn lessons from
exactly.
them. So the lessons in life that we have going forward because of that bad example or that bad experience in life are just as important as the good ones. We can't forget that.
Mm-hmm.
But the key is to recognize the bad ones as opposed to the good ones.
Right. Well, Lao Tzu talks about you learn from your mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're successful all the time, then you don't learn anything. You,
yeah,
you're just
right.
just run on the treadmill, yeah. rolling along. It's not until you fall down till you learn what you did wrong that mm-hmm. so that next time you won't do that
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the key. You have to learn from those mistakes.
Absolutely so.
I see patients in here all the time that they're on that treadmill. I mean, I prop them up. I straighten them out. I send them on their way. 3 months later, they come back. They're right back where they were,
mm-hmm.
and you know they say that when the student's ready, the master will appear. A lot of times, and I've done this for 18 years as a chiropractor and an aide here, I run into situations, and I've just learned this through my own mistakes and stuff. Is I can put the knowledge out there, but if they're not ready for it, I've wasted my breath. I really have. I mean, I can love them and do what I can do for them, but if I'm talking over their head, or if I'm two steps down the path that they haven't gone down yet, mm-hmm. and I start laying out these steps and this knowledge mm-hmm. for them, it's wasting my breath, because as much as they want to know it, they're not ready for it yet. So they'll go out, and there'll be somebody else that's messing with them out there to drag them back down, and they'll have to relearn the same lesson over and over and over again until they finally get it.
Yeah.
And until they get it, they won't even recognize the next lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it time and time again, too. People will come to a seminar and want a motivational seminar. They'll motivate me. Well, no one can do that. You have to do that yourself. You can talk. You can give as a chiropractor. You can give a great keynote address.
Right.
And it's passionate. There's true meaning there, but the people in the audience, you know, unless they take it upon themselves to be self motivated and driven enough to be motivated by what you say, it'll never happen. But one thing that you said, I would, as a former high school teacher, for example,
right.
you know, there's lots of times where students aren't ready, quote unquote, to hear what you're teaching them. But we have to think that we're putting seeds somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and that somewhere down the road in their life that those seeds will take root and grow. So I would hope that you don't think so much it's a waste of your time, because you might be planting seeds that come to life later.
Okay.
And I would think,
well, thank you.
That would be a good way to look at it. I think that there's always opportunity for people to leave and have things come back in memory. Certain situations happen. They remember what you've said. And it dawns on them that they should make different decisions or choices.
I forget a lot, and it's reminded of me occasionally of how when I'm sitting in that treatment room and these people have come to me, you know, to me, it's what I do all day, every day.
And it becomes routine for you,
right,
but
right.
the things that you say are powerful to the people that have never heard them before.
Exactly, exactly. And it rolls off my tongue because I've said it 1,000 times,
yeah.
and I sometimes don't realize, and they'll come back, you know, a year later and say, well, you know what you said to me back then, and I can't even remember what it is I
yeah.
said.
Well, I think that, you know, your doctors that, you know, have an incredible and unique, beautiful opportunity to enter into people's lives at key moments and make differences for the better. And that's one of the key themes of
the
book.
We're going to get on that in the next segment. Yeah. How are we doing? Are we about ready for the next break? Two more minutes? Okay, yeah. Say that again, Doug, because we're going to spend some time
yeah.
on that.
I think the central theme of the book, and I think that's the central theme of how all human life finds meaning, is that we realize that in order to do that, we have to enter into the lives of people and make differences for the better.
Right. And you were mentioning this earlier that, you know, no man is an island.
Right.
And, you know, a chiropractic, one of the lessons it's very just upfront with being a chiropractor is your spine is in your back. So you can't fix it yourself. Mm-hmm. And believe me, as a chiropractor, when my neck gets out of place, you know, I know exactly what I'm supposed to do. I know what's wrong. I know what it needs to fix it. But doggone it, I can't fix it. I go messing with it. I give myself a headache every time. It's like, gosh, darn it. I mean,
I thought you just hang upside down between your door. Don't you have one of those metal boots where you hang upside down?
Yeah, you know, we talked about that in a previous show. You don't do that, okay?
No, I'm kidding you. I know you're not supposed to do
because
that.
The arteries in your head, they blow up. You wind up with stroke.
I hate it when that happens.
That's not a good thing. But yeah, you know, luckily there's a chiropractor in the next room. So I can just go knock on David's door and it's like, hey, you know, my neck's kinked and I give myself a headache trying to fix myself. Mm-hmm. So, but the moral of that story, and I see it physically, in the offices, with the chiropractic example, is you cannot do this by yourself. You were not meant to go through it alone. That is not what life's about. Yep. I mean, in your hermit cave or in, and we have a danger of this with the internet and with some of the technology we have now, is somebody can sit in their room and never come out.
Oh, yeah.
And actually have no flesh-to-flesh exposure with another human being.
We have instant communication, but we've never been more isolated.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's listen to some music. You guys pop another cold one out there. And it's Friday night, jackaloperadio.com. This is Dr. Drumright coming at you.
Cosities, move them around. You had me. You had me at hello. Maybe it's the Crown Royal.
Jackalope 105 FM.
Okay, we're back. This is Dr. Drumright and Harmony Health Hour. I'm here with my good friend Doug Billings, who's just published a book called Your Wonderful Life. And where can you get this?
Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble.
And Amazon.com.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm really proud of you, Doug. I mean,
thank
as far
you.
As putting it in the book, maybe off the air I want to talk to you about doing that, because I've often thought about it, and people ask me to write a book, and I don't really know the logistics of putting it together, but you did a really good job on this. I mean, the introduction's solid, the storyline, it carries you through very well, you know, from one point to the next, and with great conclusions. You wrote this as a almost like a manual, so that you can go back to it, and you know, you don't just read it once. I mean, you've got chapters on very important topics that people will be interested in, and then go back and read through these. And it has a lot of Christian, what do you call it, references?
Well, Christian based references, certainly, but I think that they're it's not in your face Christianity. It's a reference point more than anything else. But
And you talk about your history as a and I guess I remember knowing this, that you went to like seminary schools and stuff like that. So you've got a lot of a background.
Studied theology.
Okay. Yep. Well, it's a very, very clean read. It doesn't take a long time to read, but you can go back to it. And like I said, the chapters are standalone, yet flow together really, really nice. I'm really proud
of you. Thanks, Daryl. I appreciate it. That was the intent. We wanted to tackle some really significant and meaningful issues in life, but yet do it in a straightforward, simple way. And it's, I mean, I make no claim to be Shakespeare anyway, but so writing simply is easy for me. So we hope that that's the case, and thank you for saying so.
No, you did a great job with this. You hit some personal topics in here, and what I like about it in various points in the book is you truly admit your own humanity. That this isn't, you're not dictating office from temple someplace.
If we were told to get in line for those who have made mistakes, I would be at the front of the line.
And you have no problem, you know, bringing that up and saying, look, these are the lessons I've learned. This is what works for me. And here's some reference material and some other ideas that you can use that are very simple wonderful. And you know, one of my favorites, and I think it must be yours too, because it enters in the book a lot of things, is the why we're here thing. You wrote it in the book, and I've been talking about this. Lao Tzu talks about this at all, and I think we just hit on a little bit in the last segment, probably the most important part of the human experience is the interaction with other human beings. Communication, and I do this with the living body, excuse me, and I talk about this with new patients, is what I do with chiropractic is I restore communication between the body and the soul, the consciousness, the driver being. I like to call it the captain and his ship. A lot of people come into the office, and the captain's not on the bridge. The ship's running. It's a living body, so it's immaculate in itself, and it's miraculous in the structure of the cell population that I talk about all the time on the radio show. But the ship's running on this course. If the captain's at the helm and has the courage to guide the ship, magic happens. Because the communication is there, the person is whole, they're in reality, they're guiding their ship forward. And yes, they've been through some storms, and actually the more storms they've been through, the better the captain they are.
Absolutely so.
So, but I see people all the time, especially in this pop culture, this American culture, that they've literally been trained through their education systems and through the television and stuff like that, is that the body doesn't belong to them, it belongs to the doctors. Their spirit doesn't belong to them, it belongs to the preachers. You know, the mind doesn't belong to them, it belongs to the psychiatrists. That the culture has divided us up.
My money doesn't belong to me, it belongs to my ex-wife.
Exactly. You know, you have nothing. It's, you just get to work and pay your taxes. You know, I mean, that's really what we've come to. But when they come in with their health problems, one of the first things I really try to get involved in is to understand that you have to have communication. Communication between you and your body. And the more you're at the bridge of the ship, the more your body's going to thrive and the cell population is going to regenerate properly. But what you're getting more into is the communication between human beings. You see, we have the ship of body, but we also have the ship of state, and we have the ship of humanity. And the ship of humanity, just like the body has over 2 trillion cells that communicate, with communication, live and thrive in harmony. The human race if it's there's nobody at the helm, if there's no communication between all the was there 6 billion human beings on the planet right now?
I'll take your word for it.
So something like 6 to 7 billion human beings, all souls, all sentience, mm-hmm. all consciousness with their own ships of body mm-hmm. in place. If we can enhance a communication and help everybody understand that we're all in this together, mm-hmm. then we can see a world, as Dr. Dale talks about, where there is no more war. There is no more aggression. There is no more of these situations, because how can I attack you if I understand you are just a part of me? Mm-hmm. Hating you is hating me. Mm-hmm. All these things mm-hmm. that we express by division and creating divisions between us and the outside yeah. world creates conflict every single yeah. time. And you hit on this in a little bit in the book, is that, you know, and say it to me, I mean, about the entering other lives and stuff.
Sure. I think that to give a prequel to that quote before I actually say it, the question remains then, why are we here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the grand question of all time since the time of antiquity, since the human race has been able to reason, has been, why am I here on this earth? Why are we all here, for that matter? And so, you know, philosophers, poets, musicians have all pondered this, written about it, sung about it. But the reason, as I see it at least, is that we're here to continually enter into the lives of others and make differences for the better. That sums up really everything as far as why we're here. There's no reason to sit and ponder and stress out about making significant contributions to mankind. No one's called to cure cancer necessarily. Now, if it happens, wonderful. We're called to enter continually into the lives of others and make differences for the better. And if you dissect each sentence, each word in that, enter continually into the lives of others and make differences for the better, it becomes, you know, I think, clear and easy, by the way.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you have – and by the way, it's not a one-time deal and then you're done. I've done my good deed for my life and now I'm done.
No.
Continually.
Right.
We have to continually do this. Does continually mean every day? No. It means whenever we can.
Right.
So if we make differences for the better, if we enter into people's lives and we help in whatever way, whether it's paying forward a kindness, whether it's paying the toll for the guy behind us, whatever, mm-hmm. Whether it's helping someone pay a mortgage on a more significant level, whatever it may be, that's what keeps us bonded and in connection with each other. It's those kinds of niceties, those kinds of favors that we offer, those kinds of gestures that we make that can help bring us together, as you say, into a global community, and I don't like the term global community. I shouldn't have said it, but it helps us get in tune with each other.
Right. Now, and correct me if I'm wrong, was the second commandment is love thy neighbor?
I'll take your word for that. I don't have it memorized in order, but there's yeah. one. It's up there towards the top.
Well, I'm raising my kids in a Catholic school, so I'm learning all this stuff. You know, that we had the holiday yesterday of the
yep.
Immaculate Conception.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
You know, and I didn't have any idea what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I'm on the school board of the Catholic school, so there's lots of people I can ask.
Yeah.
And I guess it means that's the day that the Virgin Mary was
conceived.
Born.
Yeah, or the Immaculate Conception.
Yeah.
She was
yeah,
conceived.
Because she
yeah.
was born without sin.
A lot of people think it's about Jesus being
yeah,
born.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's what I assumed, yeah. Know, but no, it takes a step into Jesus' yeah. mom, because
yes.
she can't bear God's child if she has
original sin.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, learn something new
every
day.
There you go. Yep. 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 And I think that, you know, along with that, the entering into people's lives at key moments to make differences, it helps us see the world in a different way. It makes things, when we get to the point where we need to realize our own mistakes and atonement, for example, is necessary, forgiveness is necessary. If we've got this mindset of entering in and helping, atonement, forgiveness, and other weighty issues can become really, really rather simple if we look at them in that perspective.
And stay consistent.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, that's the key.
It's not a radical, let's go kill this guy,
no,
but then help
no,
this
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, no, you know? Consistent across the board, right. It's like someone who wants to establish a workout routine. You can't do it just once in a while. You have to be at it continually.
Right, because yeah. life is a continual process.
Yeah.
There's only one end, and that's the end.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to a lot of 80-plus you know, people mm-hmm. that it's like, look, the people that do the best are the people that are active every day, mm-hmm. whether it hurts or not hurts. Pain is just a message from the body. It's not the problem. It's just the message. So you've got to learn to, just like you were talking about with the pain of the emotions, mm-hmm. the body pain's the same way. You have to embrace it. You have to look at it with full courage and say, this is what's going on here. The body's trying to talk to me. And then whether it hurts or not, it gets to the point as you age that it hurts all the time anyway. So it's going to hurt if you do it, and it's going to hurt if you don't. So you might as well do it.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there and live life. And I tell you what, I've seen this repeatedly with people. If you live hardy and live the life as the adventure, and I think, how did you say it as far as down at the end of this stuff? We're talking about, the love gets all the press.
Yeah. That's an important one. I mean, that's certainly, you look at our cultures, both Eastern and Western, love is king, mm-hmm. and it should be. I mean, love is the most important of all virtues, but I'll tell you this, love will never survive, ever, if we can't forgive.
Right.
It's completely dependent upon forgiveness. Just think about that for a second, because it could be a paradox for some. Love being the greatest of all virtues, I mean, wise people, much wiser than I, Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Gandhi, they all said it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't forgive, it's dead in the water. Love will never survive. And you'll never have, in a significant relationship, think about a divorce situation, for example. If you can't forgive your ex-spouse on every level, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you'll never be able to fully love anyone else again.
Yeah,
I mean, I believe that. You have to be able to forgive, and you don't let go. You don't forgive and forget. You'll remember the lessons, but you forgive. You know, Jesus, he spoke about love all the time, but on the cross, dying, forgive them, Father, they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
One of the most crucial lessons of all time.
Absolutely. You know, I call, when I talk about love, I talk about there's two languages of the human being. There's love and fear. Fear is a cloak that masks the love. The love can't get out if you're harboring fear, if you're mm-hmm. misunderstanding, if you're carrying this fear. And I like what you're added to that is that forgiveness is the way to take the cloak of fear off.
Absolutely, Darryl.
You know, that if you don't forgive, you're going to wear that mantle mm-hmm. and you're going to have that dark mm-hmm. cloak over you. And no matter how good your heart is on the inside, it's not going to get out.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a really rough ride up mm-hmm. and down with the roller coasters continuous. And as I've seen in what you've described here is, You're putting out your heart on your sleeve and on this book to help people get off the roller coaster.
Right. Well, thank you. I hope so.
Because it doesn't need to be a roller coaster, you know. I mean, life is full of adventure, mm-hmm. but the adventure doesn't have to be an up and down roller coaster.
Yeah.
It can be an adventure of a great exploration and joy mm-hmm. and expression, as long as you keep the things that you're talking about in mind. Yeah. About your job is to enter into the lives of other people and do the best you can each and every day to just be good and be nice and man, it fills your heart with love when you
do. You're right. Absolutely. And you know, there's even in the worst moments of our life, even when we have experienced that a loved one dies or we go through a relationship has come to an end in divorce or whatever, in the worst cases imaginable, there are still lessons of good and wonder to be gleaned from that. There's time and time again, people will come to me, and much like your story that you shared earlier, we were at Barnes & Noble a couple of weeks ago for a signing, and a woman comes up to me out of the crowd, and she happened to be thumbing through the book. And I talk in the book about a friend of mine, Tricia, who was we were both in an accident. We were hit by a drunk driver.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she didn't die, but permanent brain damage, continually, in need of 24-hour nursing care, et cetera, et cetera. The woman comes up to me and tells me that her son, 5 weeks married, in the car with his wife, who was driving, are hit by a drunk driver. The wife is killed. One of the worst imaginable scenarios that we can all imagine.
But you were there.
I lived through that scenario, and she identified with my story because of what had happened with her and her son. And you know, one of the themes of her questions to me was, and she wanted me to talk to her son, and who was still in the hospital, was. We were asking the question, why did this have to happen? And I just looked at her and I said, that's the worst question. Don't even bother to try to answer that question because there's no answer.
No.
There's no answer as to why this had to happen. This is an imperfect world. Mistakes happen. People have the ability to make bad choices, and that's really it. The question you should be asking yourself is, how can you honor this young, beautiful new bride going forward in life, whether it's through forgiveness of the person who hit you or some other, you know, testimonials, memorials, whatever, how do you honor the memory that you have with her? Not whether or not why this had to happen.
Yeah, don't explain it. Just accept it and move on. It is what it is. And I love that statement. I use it all the time. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. That's the card you were dealt.
Yep.
So, you know, live with love in your heart, you know, and the forgiveness is excellent.
Yep. And all too often people will turn away from the divine and their vision of whatever their God is and will blame and place blame on the divine. Everyone's allowed to get mad. Everyone's allowed to be mad at God or the divine presence and the creator and so forth. But ultimately what we're called to do is turn around, run to and cling to that presence and help ask for help and help that might guide us through the actual event itself.
Well, that's awesome, Doug. So your book is Your Wonderful Life. It was just recently released, and you can get it at Barnes & Noble locally or
Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com for that matter.
BarnesandNoble.com. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you for joining me tonight, man. It's been a great joy seeing you again, and I hope this is the beginning of more interaction and not just a flash, and then I don't see you for another 30 years.
Let's not make that happen. Thanks for the opportunity to be here with you. I've appreciated it very much.
It's been a great time.
Thanks, old friend.
Todd, you know, where the radio stations is rocking and rolling, man. We're going to be broadcasting local here real soon. You got the forums coming up. I've already got the Harmony Health Hour. I'm already populating it, and you haven't even promoted it yet. You're hitting my language when you talk about forums, because I've spent many, many hours populating forums. I had one forum, I was like 6,000 posts or something. That kind of tells you what I do with my spare time.
That's awesome.
But maybe with the kids, I won't be quite so active on this one. So I guess that wraps it up for tonight. JackalopeRadio.com. This is Dr. Drumright, Harmony Health Hour. Doug Billings, thank you again. Your Wonderful Life is the book. I highly recommend it. Excellent book, and it's been a very pleasure talking to you tonight.
Thank you, old friend. Thank you.
Talking to, and the